state of Maine and FERC have entered a memorandum of agreement to kind of grease the skids on doing the offshore, you know, offshore tidal energy. I'm not sure if it's for the wind also or not,
yeah.
But so are you all going to be sort of part of the equation there? Are they, I assume FERC and is going to be consulting you.
Yeah, we have certain regulatory responsibilities to review certain things. I think in the wind, where they're trying to get the wind sort of fast-tracked, at least for these research, you know, there's a governor's task force that's certainly trying to look at all the data and try and pick the spots that are best for the wind and the, you know, best for the environment. If, you know, and so they have come to us and asked us for our data. But unfortunately, it goes back to that shear water. Well, you know, we've been doing the migratory routes, you know, on one island. We know what comes over Seal Island because we've been doing that. This will be the third year. These other islands, the two other islands, this is the first year we've been out there. And, you know, so we don't have a really good handle on passerine use, you know, which is the birds that might actually land on these islands when they're migrating. But we have absolutely no, you know, real good idea of where in this whole place these people, these birds are foraging. Even the ones that are on our nesting islands, they can go, is it 20 to 40 kilometers, I think, a tern can go just to find fish. So if you take all of our nesting islands and you put, you know, big circles about there, and we don't even know that, you know, so we just don't, we're providing them data, but we don't have much. And that's why we're so anxious to do the shearwater study. You know, we wish that we had, it's always like that, you know, whenever you're asked to provide science, you wish you were 10 years ahead, you know, with the right equipment that you know is coming, but typically we don't have the information that they need, because it's just, it's such a huge area, you know, and we do so little, relatively so little monitoring.
It's urgent to be precautionarily, you know, conservative.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing you can do is do adaptive management. From what I understand with wind power and turbines, you know, when they do these big turbine fields, sometimes there'll be, you know, 120 turbines and there'll be one that's killing birds because it happens to be in some kind of a place that you didn't know birds were shooting through there. And so, you know, the only thing I can think of is to have some percentage that, you know, if it's a bad one, can we move it? You know, but it's expensive, and so society, you know, argues about that, about how much expense. But you know,
deal with you though, because yeah, I mean, that's your task is to keep those seabirds going.
Yeah, well, it's, and you know, part of it is we do try and work, you know, with people who are in permitting, but they're the ones who comment. We don't really, you know, comment. We try and provide the science if we can. You know, if we can look ahead and say this would be good science, you know, we try and go out there and get funding and that kind of thing.
But it's a whole different part of Fish and Wildlife that would actually do the permit reviews.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And the other thing is we do have a research arm. You know, refuges are typically land management. We do a lot more research than most, you know, as far as this kind of research that I was describing, having master's students and having, mm-hmm. you know, a biologist who's actually really doing actually sort of cutting-edge research. Pretty unusual in the refuge system because we are typically, you know, pretty understaffed and all that. But there is the USGS. We used to have our own researchers, and they got pulled into the USGS. So there are some people who just run around. There's co-op units at the universities. They tend to, in this state anyway, be doing a lot more kind of state species work. So they're, you know, looking at coyotes and this, that, and the third thing. But we do have, you know, theoretically USGS is supposed to be doing, you know, their scientists are supposed to doing some of the science that we need. And so right now they're doing a lot of stuff on climate models and sea level rise. And, you know, their scientists are really helping us out on some of this. But the wind power, I think we're all, everybody's, you know, 20, 25 years behind where we wish we would be.
Are there any proposals for wind power facilities on any of the refuges islands?
No. There is one. There actually is the Canadians, which really control Machias Seal Island, even though we say we own it. Mm-hmm. The Canadian lighthouse folks put a windmill out there, and we were a little concerned about it. They were supposed to shut it off during nesting season. They didn't. And, you know, so I was registering complaints with my counterpart in a friendly way. We have a friendly relationship, but, you know, I said, what's the story? And he said, oh, I didn't know they were running it, you know, I'll talk to them about that. And then he called me up in December or January and said, oh, you don't have to worry about the windmill anymore, the winter took it down. So, you know, and I was talking to an engineer that said maybe it was ice rime, you know, that would do that, not just straight wind, because they'd be engineered, you'd think, to withstand really high winds, but sometimes, you know, if the conditions are really bad and you get enough ice, it would just kind of collapse.
I've heard that it can just change the weight of the blades, and that you get them out of whack, yeah. They start spinning weirdly, and off they go.
Yeah, so, I don't know. And then we do have, also in the CCP, 13 of the islands that we have were, you know, we have to do a wilderness review under the Wilderness Act. All federal lands are supposed to be looked at to see whether they would make, whether they would qualify, again, against some criteria. And islands, interestingly enough, usually it's a 5,000-acre area or bigger, but any island can be considered, any roadless island. And so, of course, we had to look at all of ours, since none of ours have roads. And we did recommend that 13 of them be designated. Now, that's something Congress has to do. We can't just designate them. Congress has to designate them. But, and I've had people talk to me and say, well, you know, they're already wild. Why would you need to call them a wilderness? Because it does tie our hands in some ways with management. Mm-hmm. And the answer, the perfect answer is, of course, because then you can't put a wind. You know, nobody can come do that. That way, it's like one more layer of protection.
Right,
where,
it's preemptive.
Because they, you know, they do, there are some weird rules that have to do with energy right-of-ways and things through mm-hmm. refuges. Because obviously, anytime you have a big block of land, it's interfering with other uses that society might want to put to it. So we do have some, you know, cases where we're forced to allow right-of-ways and things that normally we wouldn't, but a wilderness designation would help in that case to try it. I would expect it would be the last place somebody would want to put, or try to put
right.
one.
Right, it couldn't be like if a bridge was built to Sears Island, we could get it declared wilderness, I guess because there's a road on it.
Yeah, I think it's a little late for that.
Okay.
Well, thanks for coming. I appreciate you coming all this way.